Tonight we're going to be talking about the idea of raising children or parenting, however you want to title it that way. And this is a passage in Proverbs chapter 22 and in verse 6 that most of us are familiar with, most of us could probably quote, where it talks about training up a child in the way that he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it. It's a great statement. But what you see in that word up there, the idea of train up, that doesn't mean just, you know, throw a piece of meat to them in a cage once in a while. You know, just feed them. It doesn't mean just to let them grow up, which is much of what happens in the world in which we live today. I mean, mom goes this way, dad goes this way, and who knows what way the kids go half the time. But this is talking about the kind of direction and instruction and training and example that will help them be able to stabilize their life and to grow up and be a person that comes to understand and know about God. That's especially what we're concerned about. And so this evening I want to look at just a few things with us to talk about this, and I really sort of entitled this lesson Parenting Skills. As you think about the term skill, it carries with it the idea to do something fairly well. A certain expertise. It comes from an old English word, this English word does for knowledge. And it carries with it the idea of a developed aptitude or ability. And so as we talk about parenting skills, we're talking about gaining some ability to be able to do that. And there are many ways that we can come by that. Certainly experience helps us out, hopefully, in this process. But you don't have all that experience when they start. Down here at the bottom, I remember my mom and dad talked to me when I was growing up. My mom and dad weren't Christians when I was young. They became Christians just before I turned a teenager. And I remember things weren't going real well as they were raising me. And I probably wasn't everything they would like me to be at the time. But I can remember one day they said, "Well, son," I think it was my mom who told me this first. He says, "You know, we've never done this before." I was the oldest one. Actually, I had an older sister. Who died when my dad was away in Korea to pneumonia. Back then, they had a tough time treating some of those things. But they'd never done this before. And then my dad had to get in on this. He says, "Yeah, and the way it's going, looks like we better figure out another way to do it." But as you look at this idea of parenting skills, certainly, it's going to take some work. And you can see someone maybe in a field of maybe construction or maybe some engineer, and they make something look real easy. They just do it, and then you get in there and you find out, man, I'm all thumbs. I don't have a clue what to do. And that reflects skill. They have some knowledge and some understanding how it works and are able to accomplish this, and they make it look like it's easy as falling off a log, and it's not. But it's because they've developed some skill. And I'll tell you, parenting is not an easy road. It is a blessed road, but it has its challenges, and it is work, and it requires something of us. And what that's going to mean is that we have to sacrifice some things along the way to be able to accomplish that. Now, I'll just mention to you a statement that I heard one time. It was about success, and it says the only place that success occurs before work is in the dictionary. In order for us to have success at this, we're going to have to work at it. We're going to have to give ourselves to it. And as we think about that, we see that a lot of people, you know, really struggle with that. Back several years ago, a good friend of mine told me about a situation out in California. This great big whale had died, and when the tide had come up, the whale floated up on the beach and got way up there, and the next tide wasn't as high. And so here in this really ritzy sort of area out there, there's this big whale, and the city's trying to figure out what to do. So they get this great idea, and they decide that they'll put some explosive in there, and they'll just blow this whale up and make it into lots of little pieces, and that'll take care of it. So the event came about, and the news media got up in the parking lot and set their cameras up, and people came out to see this event. And about that time, it was time for the explosion, and they ignited the, whatever it was, C4, TNT, with that electric blasting cap, and you hear this, ooh, ah, oh, and then you start hearing all these screams, ah, it was blown. all over the cameras and the cars. And when they got done with it, almost all the carcass was still there. You know, that's what oftentimes folks do as we think about this marriage stuff and as we think about the family stuff. We come up with all these great ideas, and all we do is make a big mess of it. But when we listen to God and the righteousness of His Word, then we can come a long way. He made us and knows how we work and what we really need, and He is able to help us if we will listen to Him along the way. Again, when we think about raising kids, it is a reality. We live in a surreal world, as they call it. And now what you do is if you want to learn to fly, you can get on Microsoft Flight Simulator, right? That was the first program I had outside of word processor years ago when I got my first Mac in 1986. And it got up there, and the really neat thing about it, I could fly around, and I made a mistake. I crashed. I just hit reset, and I could fly all over again. I didn't have to go to the hospital. You didn't have to come to my funeral. Nothing. And people are starting to think more and more that that's how life is. But that's not real. And as we think about this matter of our parenting skills and trying to raise children, we need to understand we can't say, well, I'll just not pay much attention or give my affections and my attention to this, and then I'll hit a reset button somewhere along the line and all that will go away. It doesn't work that way. We've got to start and work and labor in love, certainly, along this line. Many passages. As we talked about skill, in Ephesians chapter 6 and in verse 4, Paul talks about really a quote initially from the Old Testament. It says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. It doesn't say children obey dad. It doesn't say children obey mom. It says children obey your parents. You obey mom and dad. You can go back to the book of Proverbs and you can see again and again where it talks about a son listening to her mother's instruction and her father's instruction. And both of them are pulled into that. They are a team. We're to be a pair. We're to work together. Now, I won't get there with this study, but as you raise those kids as parents, you know, you present a unified front. If you've got some questions and all, you don't hash that out in front of the kids. You go off in your bedroom, you get away when you can by yourselves, you get that sorted out, you get on the same page and say, now here's where we are, son, or here's where we are, daughter. You work at that together. And so we bring them up, but in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, it says, fathers, and he gives us, you give these children, you bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. You give them instruction and correction. You do that lovingly, and you care for them along the way. Now, as parents, Matthew 7:11, we have our shortcomings. You being evil know how to give good gifts to your children. He says, how much more our Heavenly Father, who is perfect. He knows how to take care of us. But the point being is we make our mistakes. The best father in the world has not got through that process without making mistakes. Or the best mother, no matter how good she is, we make mistakes. But let's not use that as an excuse to make mistakes. We're going to try to do the best we can, certainly, along the way. Each child is different and complex in their own way. Again, we had a daughter, twin sons, and then another son, close within 4 years of each other. One of the things that life taught me in that was every one of them are different. And raising the twins was its own challenge, I'm telling you. And then we started having grandkids. And every one of those grandchildren that we have is different. Every one of them. And as I've said, my wife has run a daycare in our home for the last almost 29 years. And we've had lots of children come through. One of the things that keeps being reinforced here is every one of those children are different. And so that means we've got to have our thinking cap on. We've got to be mindful of them and their uniqueness and bring them along. Now, there's some fundamental principles that are going to apply across the board. But how we apply them may vary from child to child. Excuse me. And so we want to be so mindful of that. These early years are very important. Pardon me. The Catholic Church used to make the claim that if you will give us your child until for the first 6 years, they'll be a Catholic the rest of their life. Now, that was an overstatement, but there's a lot of truth to it. And the point is, those first years are very important. Sometimes people think, well, you know, just sort of let the kid grow up and then they get more interesting, they get to be a teenager, whatever, then I'll start building a relationship. Doesn't work that way. You start building that relationship while you're sitting there rocking them and caring for them and going goo-goo and ga-ga back and forth to them. And as they grow up, You build that relationship, and you help them learn several things, like self-control and others that we'll hopefully talk about here. In Matthew 6:34, you take it a day at a time. When I moved to the town where I am, the first couple of years, I was concerned because we had a number of teenagers, and things weren't going real well. And just to be honest with you, I was thinking about moving away from Casey at that time. And finally, my wife and I talked and said, listen, we just need to put our roots down, and we need to do what's right. We're going to have to deal with some problems wherever we go. And in so doing, you know, we'll do all that we can. But I was worrying myself sort of silly about that. Again, my folks didn't grow up as Christians. I didn't grow up in that environment. I didn't have a lot of mature people around me to give me advice there where we were at. But I was taking an older preacher to an airport one day, and I started just talking to him. He says, I'm trying to figure out how to do this. What's going on? He listened to me for a while, and he said, Gail, your problem is you need to listen to the Lord. Of course, that's what I thought I was trying to do. And what he was referring to is Matthew 6:34. He said, what you need to do is you need to do what's yours to do today. You do all you can to be the best father or best mother today. You do what you need to do to train and instruct these children. You do all you can today. You live until the sun goes down, till this day is over. If the Lord gives you tomorrow, you get up and that's how you live tomorrow. You take it a day at a time. You be what you're supposed to be and need to be today. And you take that each day. And then when you get down here 5, 10, 15 years down the road, whatever bridges come, you have done all that you can to prepare to cross those bridges. That was the best advice he could have given me. And it's true. And so we have to take it a day at a time and utilize the time, redeem the time, as the Apostle Paul said. This is an older picture of some of our grandkids at home. A few years back, about 4 years ago, I would say, maybe 3 and a half, looking at the age of my grandson there that's being held. But these kids and grandkids are a blessing from the Lord. I mean, that's just the only way to say it. And as we think about that, I'd like for you to go with me back to the Old Testament, to the 127th Psalm. I'm going to read these two Psalms very quickly. And I want you to follow along with me. Because this idea of the children are truly a blessing is not always the mindset of the people in which we associate with from day to day. And it's certainly not what we hear in so many circles today. In this nation, there have been over 50 million abortions since 1973, an average of about 1.3 million a year, which is a reflection of the spirit and attitude of our country. You realize that's the decimation of basically a sixth of the population of the United States. If you would take all the United States, put people together, you take one-sixth of them, you just take cut and cut them down with a machine gun. That's how many babies have been aborted since 1973. Way, way, way more than all the wars. I mean, all the wars that we've lost people in, they are not even a drop in a bucket. And I used to have a chart that I made, and you've got like one dot down here for so many thousand people. And you know, here's how many folks died in this war. Here's how many died in that war. Here's how many died in this war. And then the whole screen is covered with a number whose lives have been taken by abortion. Now I say that because that reflects a self-centered, lack of respect for life mindset that has taken place in the philosophy of this country. But let's read Psalm 127 and 128 as we read about the blessing that these young folks really are. Chapter 127 of Psalm, verse 1. Unless the Lord build the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to retire late, to eat the bread of painful labors, for he gives to his beloved even in his sleep. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They shall not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. Chapter 128. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy, and it will be well with you. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house, and your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, for thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion, and may you see prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Indeed, may you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. Children are a blessing from the Lord. And it has been noted that these psalms by some have been called psalms of prosperity. You may notice at the top of the title of those pages, it talks about these are songs of ascent from about, I think, 120 to 132 or something like that. These are songs that they would sing as they would go ascend, go up to Jerusalem. And these psalms of prosperity are talking about the family relationship here. The blessed man. The fruit takes a lot of work is one of the things I found out. I lived in the state of Washington for a little bit, some years ago, in a town that was known as the apple capital of the world. And what would happen is folks would come along and say, hey, man, I can make a lot of money growing this fruit. I'm going to buy this little house and a little bit of property here, throw some apple trees on it. I'm going to sit back in my easy chair, watch those trees grow, and I'm going to start picking the money off the trees. 6 months, 2 years later, you see a for sale sign in the yard. They found out that growing fruit was a lot of work. And that's how it is as we think about this matter of children. As we think about they are a great fruit, they take a lot of work. As they sit around the table, we had three teenage boys at the same time, and they would take the refrigerator and shake all the food out and suck it up like a swarm of locusts, and 15 minutes later want to know what there was to eat. Now I'm watching their kids do that to them. God is good. Blessed the man who has a quiver full. You know, I don't wrestle anybody anymore. I tell people that. I let my boys do it. Our youngest boy is about 6'4", 6'5". I mean, he's just solid. I mean, he's strong. He's got a heart as big as Texas. But, I mean, he could just break me in two like that. When he was probably 13 or 14 years old, something like that, I had raised the garage, and the attic of the garage was a ways up. I was going to get a ladder out. I was going to get up there and get something out of the top. He says, I'll get it, Dad. And he just jumped up, and he just pulled himself up, just disappeared. I walked in the house and said, Mom, I ain't wrestling him no more. That was it. And that's where we grew up. And the twin boys are just strong and powerful. One of the twins runs triathlons, did a half an Ironman last year before. And I don't wrestle anybody. I don't have to. They could break me in half, but they would break themselves in half before they ever started to hurt me. I'd usually get a text or a call day in and day out from them. And I'll just tell you, there's nothing like it. My wife's my best friend, someone said, but my boys, my children, are my greatest friends. So there's just no price you can put on that. And it comes from the blessings and the provision of God. Socrates made a statement long ago in the days of the Greeks. Could I climb to the highest place in Athens, I would lift my voice and proclaim, fellow citizens, why do you turn and scrape every stone to gather wealth and take so little care of your children to whom one day you must relinquish it? Which, by the way, reminds me of places like Ecclesiastes chapter 2. You talk about the vanity of life. You work and strive. You gather all this money. He says, how do you know you won't turn it over to a guy that's a fool? But even the world could see that. Socrates, great philosopher, is, you know, Greek philosophers win. But we need to give that attention to our children. And we live in a time where there are all kinds of things that are being pumped into our house. When I was a boy, they used to have carnivals and fairs. They still have those. But one of the things they had is something that was called a peep show. And it was women who would remove their attire in there. Because I can remember walking along and I asked my mama one day, she says, what is that? She said, well, that's a place where good people don't go, son. But let me tell you something. I don't care what they did. behind those walls, that is tame compared to the stuff that's being pumped into your house if you'll let it be accessed. The stuff that's on the internet, I mean, you couldn't have found that in any carnival or circus or anything in this country when I was growing up. We have to guard our children. And there are predators that will use that same avenue to try to come in and make advances. We live in a messed up world, brethren. We've got to be careful about our children. And I talk about that. I'm going to talk a lot about grandchildren because, folks, you know, as parents or grandparents, we have a lot of influence. I'm so mindful of my grandkids and my responsibility. I don't want to drop the ball in front of them. I want to encourage them and teach them and instruct them. I want to do all that I can to encourage my children to be what they need to be and those grandchildren. Grandparents, if you're in that category, instead of just the parents that we're talking about here, you need to understand you have a great responsibility before God to do all you can to influence in righteousness, to help your children, to help those grandchildren love God and get to heaven. It's more important than any other asset you have. And if you have to file bankruptcy next week, and you lose all the physical assets you have, retirement, house, car, all of them. But your offspring make it to heaven. You'll have died a rich man or woman. And I'm not just waxing eloquent here. I'm just saying that's the truth. They're priceless. And all our other pursuits are insignificant. When our kids were growing up, we didn't have our television hooked up. We had a television and a VCR. We'd record some westerns. When I'd go to India, Deborah would want the TV turned on so she'd make sure India didn't fall off into the ocean. And so she would record on VHS tapes, you know, some westerns. And then that was our TV. Saturday night, we'd watch an old western. We'd eat popcorn. And we'd laugh and have a good time together. It is interesting to me, when 9/11 happened, Deborah wanted to turn the TV on and see what in the world's going on. We had it on for a number of years, and then about 4 or 5 years ago, I said, I've had enough of this, and I turned it off. Now, I'm not up here beating a drum. I'm not telling you've got to turn your TV off, okay? But that was a decision that I made in our home early on. And I'm just going to be honest with you, I think it was one of the best decisions I made. And today, I never preached this to my kids. I didn't spend a lot of time talking about it. But I find it interesting, not one of our four children or their families have their TVs hooked up where they've just got whatever flows coming in. Now, they will stream some movies, they'll watch DVDs. What I'm trying to say is if we let Hollywood and we let the world rule our home, we let that stuff be piped into our home, we're asking for compromise of our thinking. And so we need to be on guard. And I tell you what, when I've got the remote control and stuff comes on, Grandpa, you better get that half-naked woman off there. Let them know that, hey, I don't need to be looking at that son, and neither do you. That's what that thumb is for. I didn't know what that was for before they had a remote control, but that's what God must have designed it to be, so we can shut that TV off. I heard a guy say a lot of years ago, back when remote controls first came on, he says, man, I just don't understand. I just cannot comprehend anybody needing a remote control. Anybody that is so lazy, they can't ask their wife to get up and change the channels. But you've got it. Use it. If you need to use it to turn the TV off, turn it off. If you need me to help you come and throw your TV out the window, I'll come and help you. I'm not encouraging that. Take that in line of what I'm saying. I'm just saying that we live in a perilous time where stuff is brought into our homes today that I'll tell you, my grandpa wouldn't have let in the town, let alone in his house. Well, time. Okay. Family is a great blessing. It's a great privilege. We need to always operate on the basis of love. Let me see where that clock's at. Okay. It's not where I want to be. One of the best gifts that I can give my children is to love their mother. My children, my grandchildren, see that I love grandma or I love my wife wholeheartedly. It's one of the greatest gifts that I can give them. They see that. They see security. They see warmth. They see stability in the midst of an unstable world. They find a level of security in a place where a lot of things are happening that should cause them to feel insecure. One of the greatest things I can do is love her like I should. And as they need a place of security, they need a security in both physical realms and sexual realms and mental realms. They need that stability and instruction. I need to talk straight with them, age appropriately to help them. They need to know about the birds and the bees. I tell you what, they're hearing all kinds of distorted information about that. So young, you cannot even start to imagine. One of our brethren who was on the school board back up 3 or 4 years ago in the junior high class was talking to the young people there. I mean, he's sort of in the middle of this. He's in the school board. And he was amazed the knowledge, the street knowledge, if you'll pardon my expression, they had in that junior high class. We've got to be talking to them in an appropriate way. And we need to protect them. Girls need to be hugged in purity and holiness. They need a genuine demonstration of their importance and their great worth. I hugged the stuffings out of my girl when she was growing up, our little Rachel. And now when I meet her, she hugs the stuffings out of me. She married a godly man who's preaching in Roanoke, Virginia. He's a good man, a good husband, a good father, a good Christian. But she needs that kind of security. She needs to know what pure love is. There's a difference between warmth and affection and holiness and lust. She needs to see that out of her father and her grandfather, just not to spoil her to pieces, but to let her know she's worth spoiling and that she's loved. And our young boys, they need to have respect. They ought not to grow up selfish and self-centered, but they need to learn respect and self-worth and building that. In 1 John 3:16 through 18, it talks about us as the children of God. And 1 Corinthians 13:4 through 7, the characteristics of love. We need to use these, as we said. We need to always follow this rule of love. I've got notes down here somewhere. I'm going to figure out where they're at. As we operate on this basis, it will help us tremendously. There is a parable that I like. If I can find it here in these notes, I want to read this to you. I read this. It came from a bulletin article when I was a young man, and it helped me along the way. So you take it for what it's worth. It's called The Parable of the Lawn. The Parable of the Lawn. When Mike was 3, he wanted a sandbox. His father said, "There goes the yard. We'll have kids over here day and night, and they'll throw sand into the flower beds, and the cats will make a mess in it, and it'll kill the grass for sure." When Mike was 5, he wanted a jungle gym set with swings that would take his breath away and bars to take into the sun. And his father said, "Oh, I've seen those things in backyards, and do you know what they look like? Mud holes in a pasture. Kids digging their gym shoes into the ground, it'll kill the grass." And Mike's mother said, "It'll come back." Between breaths, as Daddy was blowing up the plastic swimming pool, he warned, "You know what they're going to do to this place? They're going to condemn it and use it as a missile site. I hope you know what you're doing. They'll track water everywhere. And you'll have a million water fights, and you won't be able to take out the garbage without stepping in mud up to your neck. And when we take this swimming pool down, we'll have only a brown lawn on the block." But Mama said, "It'll come back." When Mike was 12, he volunteered his yard for campout. As they hoisted the tent and drove in the spikes, his father stood at the window and observed, "Why don't I just put the seed out in a cereal bowl for the birds and save myself the trouble of spreading it around? You know for a fact that those tents and all those big feet are going to trample down every single blade of grass, don't you?" "Don't bother to answer," he said. "I know what you're going to say. It'll come back." The basketball hoop on the side of the garage attracted more crowds than the Winter Olympics. And a small patch of lawn that started to look a little promising turned into a bare spot, not only the size of a garbage can lid, but soon encompassed the entire side yard. Just when it looked like the new seed might take root, the winter came and sled runners beat it into the ridge, and Mike's father shook his head and said, "I never asked for much in this life, only a little patch of grass." And his wife smiled and said, "It'll come back." The lawn this year was beautiful. It was green and alive and rolled out like a sponge carpet all along the drive where gym shoes had trod, along the garage where bicycles used to fall, around the flower beds where the little boys used to dig with iced tea spoons. But Mike's father never saw it. He anxiously looked beyond the yard and asked with a catch in his voice, "He will come back, won't he?" As a young man, that touched my heart. And it helped teach me an important lesson that I needed. Children are more important than stuff and pain and everything being just in its place. As we think about this rule of love in all that we do, let us abide by that. Another thing that goes along with this matter of love, as Paul talks about that we're not to provoke our children to anger, to wrath, we're here in Colossians. But how do we go about that? Well, we can provoke our children to wrath by harsh and critical spirit instead of concern and love. They need correction. They need loving correction. That doesn't mean I don't have a stern voice. I said, "Son, stop that." That's what I mean. I don't have to tell him 3 times or 15 times. Now, I'm talking about as they grow up, and I realize there's a learning curve, and so I put that in context. But we can have unreasonable demands. We can be unfavorably comparing them with others. Inconsistent treatment, so they don't know, you know, what's what. You know, one time, you know, I get chewed out for doing nothing, and next time I tear the world up and nothing happens. Find some consistency in there. Constant criticism. Dealing unjustly with various matters, excessive or unfair punishment, and on. But there are things that we can do that are unjust and not in balance. And we do not want to provoke our children to anger. And again, here's just the rule of thumb that applies to all kinds of things. If the roles were reversed and you were the child and they were the father, how would you want to be treated? How would you want to be taught? How would you want to be considered? As a kid, you know how you're feeling. Maybe, you know, your world turned upside down. As a young guy, maybe your girl, you know, that was real friendly with you, all of a sudden she turned her back on you or something, and you're upset. And so, try to consider. Consider them and respect them as a human being, because that's what they are. You show them that respect. One of the greatest compliments my mother-in-law gave me, and I had a great mother-in-law. She died in 2000 of cancer. But she said one day, she said that, you know, "Gail, you treat your boys with more respect than anybody I've ever known." And I thank her for that. That's a blessing she gave me. But I tell you what happens on the other side of that. Now that they have grown up, they treat me with that respect. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. They love God. The two boys that live around home preach 2 Sundays each of them out of the month in local congregations. They teach. They have a significant influence there. And we are honored by it as husband and wife. But treat them the way that you would want to be treated if you were in their shoes. Now, if you told me that I could just choose one text out of the Bible about raising kids, this is it. Deuteronomy chapter 6. And what it says, you love God, first of all, with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. And then what you do, as you love God, then you fill your heart with His will. You put His commands not in your head, but in your heart. In other words, you don't just memorize them, but you take them into your inner being and you try to live by them. Then what happens when you got yourself straightened out here, then you're in a place to teach your children diligently. And by the way, diligent means you get after them. You teach them as you're walking along the way, as you're sitting down around the table, as you're getting ready to lay down at night, as you're at a ball game and some parent acts in some ungodly way, or something happens here. Well, I said, "Well, this is not how the Lord would have me to act, is it, son?" And so you find those opportunities. My wife's much better at that in raising our kids than I was. She's smarter than I am. That helps. But she is just a tremendous teacher that way. And as husbands and wives, as grandfathers and grandmothers, we need to be teaching them those things. They need things that are of value. Do I care if the Indianapolis Colts or the Chicago Bears win the Super Bowl? Maybe or maybe not. But I'll tell you what. It doesn't matter. Not really. But there are some things that really matter. Now, I'm not putting down ball or hobbies or any of that, but you understand the distinction I'm making. We need to figure out what's really important, and they need to see that reigning in our hearts and our lives. And you know what this talks about? God is everything to me. And His Word is His Word, and that's what I live by. And I love it because it's His Word. And then I instill it in their hearts. You can't put that in a can and pass it out. That's just fundamental to who we are as we walk before God. When you move on with me here in this chart, the compass is pretty narrow-minded, isn't it? If a compass wasn't narrow-minded, you'd never be able to figure out how to get anywhere. Of course, I realize a lot of people don't know what a compass is anymore because we've got GPS. But a compass, that needle points north. And that's how ships used to get where they need to go. That's how in the military, when you get your map out and you're trying to get out in the middle of some place you've never been, you figure out where you're at and how to go. As we live life, we are a role model before our children. They need to see that we love God first, as Deuteronomy 5 talks about. That good parenting has so much to do with what we really are as a parent. Wherever we obviously place our values, our children tend to do the same. I have an article by Sewell Hall on secularizing our children. I actually gave an electronic copy of that to Josh today if you want that. But I have taken it and photocopied it and put it in our crack rack as a trifold. And basically, long story short, he said, send our kids off to college, and it's not that the English department pounds evolution into them or the biology department. I mean, those things happen. But they get so watered down with so many secular things that they starve spiritually, was the point of the article. And what we have to be careful as parents is our children grow up. They need a balanced life. They need to live in this world. They need to learn how to fish or have fun or ride bikes. They need some of those things. But it's not like the shirt that I used to see. Basketball is life. It's not so. Or anything else. Jesus Christ is life. And so as we think about these things, there's some old adages. The acorn doesn't fall far from the tree. Sort of goes along with what we've just said. And I like this one. How can one have a sweet fragrance whose father is an onion and whose mother is a garlic? Again, acorn doesn't fall far from the tree. And the fourth point here is that we need to train and instruct and discipline, which I've alluded to along the way. A great passage about that is found in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 11. It uses the word discipline, 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 discipline. That just means training and instruction. And so it's a great passage. If you're not familiar with that, I'd encourage you to study it carefully. It's talking about actually God raising us as spiritual children. But in the course of that, he talks to us about the physical training of children as well and how that works. We need to understand that discipline is not something that we do to the child, but rather something we do for the child. I discipline. I correct, I admonish, I train, I instruct my child because I love them and I'm trying to help them. I'm not doing it to them. I'm mad at you, so I'm going to get you. I'm trying to help you, son. I'm trying to help you, daughter. And I think this probably comes from a book that I have that I picked up many years ago. I think it's one of Dobson's books. I love you too much to let you behave like that. I love you too much to let you act like that, to behave like that. This is unacceptable. If you were here several of these lessons, I mentioned a little book called The One-Minute Manager. You don't have to talk them to death. You just got to get the message across. Son or daughter, I love you too much to let you behave like that. We're not going to do that here. That's the end of the story. And that's how we live and operate. As we train, this teaching and learning process also has to include this matter of self-control. My favorite passage on self-control is Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 28. And what he does is he compares life and people to like a fortified city. And in that particular city, he says, like a city whose walls have been cast down or knocked down, so is a fella that doesn't have self-control. The last verse of chapter 25, like a city that is broken into and without walls, is a man who has no control over his spirit. Now, if you're familiar with fortified cities, they put those walls up to protect what's inside from the enemy on the outside. But once you breach those walls, you knock those walls down, you make big holes in those walls, then the army can march in. And what he's saying is like a city whose fortified walls have been knocked down. That's like a fellow that does not have any self-control, or like a lady that doesn't have any self-control, is anybody can come along and come in. My wife helped impress this upon me with our children and with the daycare kids. One of the most important lessons that you teach them in those first couple or 3 years is this matter of self-control. They can control themselves. They can sit still. Now, I've got some high-strung grandkids. My youngest son's boy, I mean, he can't sit still. He's worse than his grandpa. But they're working hard in an appropriate way, trying to bring that under control. I said, you need to sit still, son. And you'd sit there 2 minutes that way, then I'll let you up. If you don't, you're going to sit there longer. And it's hard for him. I mean, he's trying, but he's learning. We have to teach them. And if we don't teach them self-control here, it's going to be hard to teach it here. And when those passions have built a huge fire, you can forget it if they don't learn it down here. I like old clipper ships. I really like that. But I was looking at a book some time ago, and I found this diagram. And this is how they built boat parts. Now, you may or may not be able to see and appreciate this, but here's like the hull of the boat, and you can see here's what they call a knee. Okay. Now, what they would do, you can see how they cut this wing knee out here, and they would bend these so they could have these parts. But this right here, if I can give you a circle there, this young tree, there was pressure put on it. They would tie it off here, then they might pull it off over there, depending on what they're wanting. But they would put pressure on it to move it in certain ways so it would grow and bend in a certain way, so then they could use it for these parts they built ships out of. And that's what we do in regard to our children. We're trying to put the kind of good, appropriate instruction and influence and example to help them grow up the way that they need to. We bring them up. That's what they're doing to those trees. They're nurturing those trees along. Sometimes they need water. Sometimes they need staked out. Sometimes they need a little more pressure here, a little more support there. But think about it. If that imagery helps you, it helps me to think about what we're trying to do. We're looking at the end result. And that's what you always want to remember. You've got a plan. You've got a purpose. This training, instruction, all we're doing here has an end result. I want them to stand on their own 2 feet before God and live and to serve Him. I want them to be a woman or a man that's honorable and fears God and serves Him. And that's what we're trying to train as we come along. There's purpose in life. We ask the question, what are you building? Another thing or two, and then the lesson will be yours. There's a story that's told about a fellow, and he came up to a place where they were building a great cathedral. And he saw some workmen out there. And he saw one fellow along the sidewalk, and he says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Well, I'm laying bricks." And he went a little farther and talked to another guy. He said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, I'm building a wall." And he went on beyond that. There's a third man. He says, "Well, sir, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm building a cathedral." They were all laying bricks. But the purpose with which they worked and the end result that they were after was a completely different mindset. We're not throwing a little bit of food to our kids and a little bit of support so they've got food and covering. We're trying to raise kids that will be children that will be a heritage and a glory to God, and whose souls will be saved in the end. There's a little poem that says, I took a piece of plastic clay and idly fashioned it one day. And as my fingers pressed it still, it moved and yielded to my will. I came again when days were past. The bit of clay was hard at last. The form I gave it, it still bore. But I could change that form no more. I took a piece of living clay and gently formed it day by day, and molded with my power and art a young child's soft and yielding heart. I came again when years were gone. It was a man I looked upon. He still that early impress wore, and I could change him nevermore. There's so much truth in this. It's a poem, I understand, but it's so true. Don't forget to laugh along the way. Share life, enjoy life together. As growing up, we couldn't afford much in the way of any kind of fancy vacation, so we had a cheap tent. And our vacation, we would go off camp somewhere. And a lot of times my wife's family would meet us in Tennessee in some of those places. But one of my brother-in-laws is very organized, and so he always made a list. So you got to have a tent peg, got to have a hatchet, got to have this, got to have... And the last thing he put on the list was, don't forget your humor. And you need that, because sometimes things get frustrating. And you need that in life. Laugh together. It's going to be real frank. I'm going to tell you sort of, I'm going to open up the shades behind my own life right now. We've been going through some challenges. It looks like I'm probably going to be moving from where I'm at before too long. I've got two of my kids there. We've had some difficulties. I got a call yesterday from a place asking if I'd be interested in moving. It's quite a ways away from where our kids are at. I don't know that we'll be interested. But when I was talking to my wife a while ago, she was talking to our daughter. And my wife's mama died in 2000. But she said, you know, I thought about this. I wish my mom was here so I could ask her what she would tell me. She said, but I already know that. And says, and then my daughter told me the same thing. That's going to be away from us. It would do whatever we need to do. That's hard. But I have said for years, I would rather have my children living in Siberia being faithful to God than around the corner and not prepared to meet their God. And I mean it. And when our daughter and son-in-law moved to Virginia, that was a long ways away. But what I had to do is I had to fly the flag. I said, Mama, you remember what I said and what we said? They're going there to do the Lord's work. To God be the glory. And God's blessed them. But we're raising these children to fear God. Malachi 2 says that God desired a godly offspring. In the New American Standard, translated that way. And as we raise our children, and as we look back over the years, we can give thanks and glory to God for what He has provided. We've made our mistakes. All of us have. But I tell you what, train up a child in the way that he should go. And when he is old, he'll not depart from it.